Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Seth Cropsey is in the house virtually. We're talking about naval power and what the American nation requires in order to safeguard its interests, not just around the world, but really here at home as well, not least to ensure our economic well-being by maintaining freedom of the seas. Seth has a great experience in this part of the battle space, both in the Reagan and Bush administrations. He also served, by the way, as a Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low-Intensity Conflict. These days, he runs the Hudson Institute's Center for American Sea Power. A utility infielder, if ever there were one. Seth Cropsey, let me ask you about the size of the fleet, as you have forecasted, is hoped for at about 350. Talk about its component parts, if you will. Do you see the continuing utility of large deck aircraft carriers, nuclear powered at that, as a key piece of a fleet of whatever size, but particularly, you know, our ideals?
Yes, I do, Frank. But changes are needed. And specifically, we're going to shift one way or another, whether slowly or quickly, and I'd rather see it quickly, from manned missions to unmanned planes flying off carrier decks. And the advantage that gives us is not only the obvious one, which is that we don't put people in harm's way, but that we get planes that have much longer range. And that's important because of the missiles that the Chinese are developing, whose advertised ability is to be able to hit an aircraft carrier at sea at a distance of 1,000 miles. And the manned planes that we have right now don't have the range to do that without a great deal of tanking. So that's got to change. And it's where technology is going, and I think that the carriers will have to adapt to that. The other thing is that, having said that, I think there's the need for the large deck carriers and the number of sorties that planes from it can conduct. That doesn't mean that all the carriers should be large deck carriers. I think there should be a mix of smaller carriers that can be used in situations that are less dangerous and require less naval power, less force protection, so that we don't have to send a huge carrier to do a relatively smaller business. The large carriers ought to be reserved for places like China, for the West Pacific, for possibilities like those that exist today off the Korean Peninsula, but they're not necessarily needed if the object is a group of terrorists somewhere in the Middle East. So I think the mix needs to change.
It is noteworthy that in recent days we've had three of those large deck carrier battle groups operating off the Korean Peninsula, and demonstration of American resolve, one would hope, that would be unmistakable from Kim Jong-un's vantage point. Let me ask you about submarines, Seth Cropsey. This is an area where we've long prided ourselves on having the best of the undersea fleets of the world, but their numbers have been shrinking. And I wonder what priority you would assign to getting those numbers back up, especially in light of improvements that have been made in diesel and other unconventionally powered vessels and their proliferation around the world.
You know, the submarine is the ultimate stealth weapon, at least for today and for the foreseeable future. And it's simply a question of time until the Chinese are able to outnumber us effectively. In numbers of ships, that's already close to parity.
And how about the quality?
Well, the quality doesn't match. The quality doesn't match. And that comes back to the question we were talking about before about capability and capacity. Our capabilities are unmatched. The capacity is a problem, though, because if you can flood the oceans with lots of diesel electric submarines, you increase the problem tremendously.
I think it was Stalin who said that quantity has a quality all its own. And to the extent that we are watching, again, not just the Chinese building up their undersea capabilities, but also the Russians and to varying degrees others, is there a concern, Seth Cropsey? I know the Navy has been very insistent for decades on keeping their ships nuclear-powered, these submarines. Is there an argument for looking at a mix of power systems to ensure that we get more numbers of our own?
Yeah, that's a very good argument for that. The diesel-electric submarines or air-independent propulsion submarines are considerably less expensive than nuclear ones. More boats in the water, under the water, significantly complicates the potential enemy's problem. But while we're talking about this, it's also important to note the unmanned underwater craft. Underwater submarines can also be a large force multiplier, and that's something that significant resources need to be spent on.
Yeah, there's some real concern about a very powerful one that the Russians seemingly are building that has quite considerable range and the possibility of delivering a very large thermonuclear weapon. It's a case in point, I think. Let me ask you about one other area, Seth Cropsey, quickly. I've been a proponent for a long time, as I think have you, of having missile defenses at sea where they can be moved easily and without getting a lot of permission and provide increasing areas of protection against the sorts of missiles you mentioned, threatening our carriers today, but also our nation. How important is that mission to the United States Navy, and should it be, especially as you're looking at building out the fleet?
Yeah, very important. As missiles are perfected and means of delivering them, both launched from land and from naval aircraft, increase. And I'm again talking about the West Pacific. Not only our fleet, but places like Guam and the bases that we have in South Korea and Japan are increasingly vulnerable to missile attack. So if we were going to get serious about the problem here, we'd be looking at ballistic missile defense throughout the missile's flight, the enemy missile's flight, and we don't have that capability yet. And a significant investment needs to be made in that.
Seth Cropsey, there's so much more to talk about on all of this. We don't have time to even get into, let alone do justice to the question of what the effects have been on the Navy and its performance of some of what's been described as social engineering. I'm mindful of the impact of women getting pregnant on ships, causing disruption in their readiness and perhaps even their deployments and so much more. But that's for another day. In the meantime, I do want to thank you, Seth, for the long service you've given to the country in the area of American sea power, trying to ensure we have it and that we use it effectively. Your books on the subject, including most recently Sea Blindness, How Political Neglect is Choking American Sea Power and What to Do About It, are really required reading for all of us concerned about the national security. And I thank you for those, as well as your service in government and many, many years in the past. Keep up the good work, my friend, at the Hudson Institute. Come back to us soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.